Penguin Random House Audio presents The Godmother, Murder, Vengeance, and the Bloody Struggle of Mafia Women. This is the author, Barbie Latza Nadeau. Dedicated to my friend and mentor Chris Dickey, who I wish had lived long enough to read this book he inspired me to write. Chapter 1. Puppetta's Kitchen. Castellammare di Stabia, Italy. It was a warm summer afternoon and Assunta Puppetta Maresca was tapping her manicured jet-black fingernails on a white marble tabletop that was stained with what looked like red wine or blood. We were sitting in the kitchen of her fluorescent-lit apartment in a coastal town of questionable character south of Naples, where she was born into a crime family in 1935, and where she died December 29, 2021. The heavy wooden shutters were closed to keep out the heat, and a ceiling lamp swayed in the breeze created by a flimsy plastic fan perched on the counter. It was months before the COVID pandemic changed the world, and Puppetta's biggest health fear was suffering a stroke, despite doing nothing to prevent it. A pack of menthol cigarettes in a gilded case sat neatly next to an ornate ashtray and matching lighter in the center of the table. A bedazzled vape pen on what looked like a rosary hung on her chest like a necklace. She puffed on it between cigarettes and blew smoke directly into my face. More than once she told me she shouldn't smoke. "These will kill me," she said between puffs. "I should stop." The crepey skin on the backs of her small hands was too smooth for a woman in her 80s and looked as if it had been surgically stretched around her swollen joints. Her age spots had been bleached and looked like fading bruises, as if someone had clutched her hand too hard. She briefly put her cigarette in the ashtray and picked up a strand of her crimson-dyed hair that had fallen onto the table and stretched it between her fingers, lifting her pinkies ever so slightly before brushing it off to the tile floor for her maid to eventually sweep up. It was impossible to look at Puppetta's hands without imagining them wrapped around the silver Smith & Wesson 38 pistol she once fired in the defining moment of her life. More than 60 years before I sat with her, she used that gun to take down the man who ordered the fatal hit on her husband. Surely her husband's rival was dead after her first blast knocked him to the ground, but she still grabbed her 13-year-old brother Ciro's revolver and sent another round of bullets, 29 in all, in the direction of the bleeding corpse. The killing took place outside a busy coffee bar in Naples in broad daylight. She was 18 years old and 6 months pregnant at the time. Puppetta claimed she still kept the pistol in the nightstand next to her bed. I once asked her if I could see it, but she insisted that she would only take it out to use it. I never asked again. Of the many things I grew to admire most about the woman nicknamed Lady Camorra was her dry sense of humor. She was a cunning liar and a cold-blooded killer, but if you could look beyond that, she was genuinely delightful. The first time I sat in Puppetta's kitchen, after stalking her at her usual coffee bar and vegetable market until she agreed to grant an interview without charging me for it, she offered me a bitter espresso served in a chipped demitasse cup, clearly saving the fine china for better company. I stared into the dark, steaming liquid, hesitant to take a sip out of concern that she could have slipped something into it. In a brief bout of egotism, I envisioned that perhaps I could be a last hurrah killing. No one even knew where I was, and for someone with her connections to the underworld, it would be reasonably easy to get rid of my body. Covering crime and murder and death, essentially trafficking and tragedy for the many years I've been in Italy, has jaded my perception of my own mortality. Over the years, I have evolved from thinking that nothing bad will ever happen to me to expecting it. I see the worst first, as I'm often reminded by friends and family. I am generally a voice of doom. In my defense, the paranoia was bolstered by the fact that Puppetta was not drinking any of the espresso herself. Too much caffeine in the afternoon made her nervous, she answered when I asked if she was joining me. I drank it in one gulp, as is the custom in Italy. She watched me closely, enjoying my fear, or at least that's how I choose to remember it. Every time I saw her after that, she also drank coffee with me, no matter what time of day. As we spoke that first afternoon, a radio station played Neapolitan folk songs, peppered with advertisements for private home security services. When the news bulletin came on, she touched her ear to signal me to be quiet so she could listen to see if anyone she knew had been caught up in something unseemly. Pupeta was wearing a dark purple tank top that pushed her enormous soft breasts together to create wrinkly, freckled cleavage over which the vape pen perilously dangled, at times threatening to fall inside. She was sitting on a squeaky wooden chair on a faded Tullian pink floral pillow that made her seem much taller than she was. Every time she fidgeted, the chair let out a tired groan, prompting the old French bulldog sleeping at her feet to growl in his sleep. Everything that was not covered in plastic in Pupeta's adjacent living room was instead draped with crocheted lace doilies. Pretty hand-painted blue and yellow plates from Sicily hung on the walls, and elegantly framed pictures of her twins at various stages of their lives were lined up on a polished chest of drawers against the dining room wall. There were no pictures of her first son, Pasqualino, to whom she gave birth in prison while serving a sentence for murder, and who mysteriously disappeared when he was 18 years old. Outside the window, the beaches of Pupeta's hometown are littered with fuel canisters and discarded fishing gear washed in from the polluted Mediterranean Sea. Signs warn swimmers to avoid the water, but there are at least a half a dozen elderly men digging for clams out there any day of the year. In the winter, they wear thigh-high waders and heavy jackets. In the summer, they're in brightly colored Speedos and flip-flops. The seafront town has one of the clearest views anywhere of the full breadth of Mount Vesuvius, the volcano that destroyed the original town of nearby Stabiae during its infamous AD 79 eruption. Castellammare di Stabia sprung from those ashes and is synonymous with moral decay, so much so that in 2015, a local priest performed an exorcism by helicopter, symbolically spraying out gallons of holy water high above the 65,000 inhabitants to make sure he didn't miss a single sinful soul. Crime didn't stop, though the aerial blessing did miraculously make the town's calcium-clogged fountain spring back to life, or so the legend goes. The Neapolitan Camorra's criminal roots run too deep here for a clerical cleansing, and Pupeta was emblematic of all that is wrong about this crime-ridden backwater. The first time I stayed in Castellammare, I rented a rooftop Airbnb that gave me clear views of the city, sea, and menacing volcano. The woman who let it to me wanted to be clear that I understood that I wasn't on the Amalfi Coast, the Tony luxury resort area just across the Sorrentine Peninsula, where organized crime is relegated to the background, not as blatantly out front as it is in Castellammare. Though the town is no more than half an hour from splendorous Sorrento itself, Castellammare is simply another world, a sinister one where criminality has permeated every corner of society. When I explained that I was a journalist chasing a mafia-related story, she seemed relieved. She wouldn't have to apologize for the rampant delinquency of the city that was easily witnessed from her terrace. At any given time of the day or night, people were huddled together on the streets below, trading in any manner of contraband. During the many times I visited, I saw little bags of drugs being handed over for cash, and from the rooftop terrace, a large box that could have easily held a substantial weapon. The nervous seller seemed ready to get rid of it, and the buyer ran immediately to a waiting BMW with dark windows and sped away. Every time I left the apartment, I felt like I was being watched. The streets of Castellammare are lined with normal-seeming shops, but on close observation, they seemed like fronts for other businesses. No one ever appeared to be carrying a bag as they walked out, not even as they were still standing at the cash register. People gave strange nods to each other, almost as if there were lookouts posted on corners. Expensive cars were as prominent as rusted Fiats, and the harbor was lined with extravagant yachts, even though the average reported income in this town hovers slightly above the poverty line. I visited many times, but could never quite figure out the heart and soul of the city, perhaps because it didn't have one. The pet shops sell small mice to feed pythons and other exotic reptiles that are popular among residents for reasons that don't seem entirely clear. The lingerie shops have whole sections of red apparel, samples of which find their way into
Sample complete. Ready to continue?